Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and today we have a very special New York Times best-selling author. Her name is Lisa Scottolini, and she's here to talk about her 18th novel, Save Me, which is just out from St. Martin's Press, and she's here to join us. Hello.
Hello. I'm so happy to be back.
I'm always happy to have you around. I love this picture on the cover. I mean, did you pick this, or did you have a say into what was going to be on the cover?
They get all the credit. I mean, I didn't pick it. I do have cover approval, but they're such a great publisher. You know, even if I didn't, I think they show me a couple of things, and they kind of like this the best, and I think it's one of the best covers I've ever had. I'm not sure I've always loved my covers in the past, and I think it really kind of gave the I love the emotionality, you know, for people who don't see it. It's a picture of a mother holding a child and daughter, and the daughter is, like, looking up at her and smiling. And I thought, oh, you know, you can't see that picture and not smile yourself. And since the book is so emotional, I like that the cover captured that emotionality, too.
Now, you are a very emotional person, and you write a very emotional book. Why is that? Why do you enjoy writing emotional books?
I think it's because I'm Italian, probably.
That could be it.
And a woman, which is like a double whammy.
There's nothing wrong with being a woman.
Yeah, right. I agree. And men can be emotional, too,
That's right.
I mean, I think that, to me, you know, maybe because I'm an opera fan, but I think drama is really matters. So, you know, if you're not, you got to write about something meaningful and dramatic for it to be worth anybody's time.
Right, it's got to tug at the eyes. You've got to feel like you're invested in these characters and you care what happens to them.
Right, you have to care. It has to be big enough for you to care, and it also has to be big enough to really. You know, because I think this book explores a lot of kind of deeper issues, and I really wanted it, even though it's a fast-moving book, to sort of really plumb what it is to be a parent and all the no-win situations that parents sometimes have, and bullying probably brings that one really to the fore. And also to talk about the kind of bullying that sometimes adults do to each other, you know, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter or just meanness or just by suing people.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're really going to try to explore heavy issues, you might as well have something that can really carry that freight.
It's interesting. I mean, I was bullied in high school, and when I think back on it, and I think, well, why didn't I just do that? Why didn't I just slug the guy and run away? You know, it's harder when you're in the situation than when you can look back on it.
No, it really is. And as I think I said in the signing, you know, at the store, I mean, I was bullied when I was younger, and you don't. You know, that's part of the victim, I was going to say victimology, which I don't know if it's a word, but you don't think, you're not sure fighting back helps. You know, like when people are making fun of you, if you fight back, they just make more fun of you. And, I mean, I always think of poor substitute teachers, you know?
Right.
I was never one of the cool kids, so I was not one of the kids dropping the pencils. But I got to admit, it seemed a little, even though it was naughty and mean, the more the substitute teacher got frustrated, the more everybody it was just terrible.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably the same mentality that when someone says, you know, wipe that smile off your face, it makes you smile more. And and the other thing about bullies, too, and probably happened to you, and I know it happened to me, is that there's not only one, there's a few.
Yeah.
Or there's the one, and like so much of the literature says now, there's the bystanders who kind of are so glad that they're not the guy's target that they go along.
Ooh,
and
horrible.
Yeah, and it's you against a group of people. No one's going to slug anybody in that position.
And you know, when there was a substitute, I used to get afraid because then I thought, I'm going to be bullied more during this class. It's horrifying. This is a horrifying thing for any child to go through.
It really, really is. I mean, I think it's really, you know, you talk about drama. I mean, there's real anguish there. Could you just imagine, you know, being a kid? I mean, it's tough enough in high school, but imagine being a little kid, you know, before your opinion of yourself is formed, and every day you have to go to this place, and you're going to know you're going to get beat up or belittled or even just sit alone and always try to smile and not know where to look. And it's painful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, and of course it's so sad nowadays because those kids, the suicide issue is really looms large. They go, wow, you know, when you see like a 13-year-old deciding to end her own life or his own life, it's just tragic.
Right. Now, Save Me. This is the title of the novel, Save Me. It's such a... And the title just resonates, too. I mean, you think, well, save who? And so you right away you're thinking, I can't wait to see what this book is about. So right away that grabs you and draws you into this book.
Well, that's nice of you to say. I know. It's hard to think of titles. I do have a hard time.
Why do you have so much trouble with titles? You
said that before. I don't know.
Why don't you, like, go to sleep and just think of, like, 10 titles and then wake up and decide what the best one is?
And the funny, you're right, because it kind of keeps you up. And so, normally, I probably went through 50 titles before this title.
Well, what was it about Save Me that grabbed you? I mean, it is a great title. I loved it.
Well, thank you. And actually, this one sort of came to me. I just was like... What? The title's really... I think it's hard for me also because I talk so much. So to only use two words is very hard for me. But it also requires you to really... There's a wonderful... my guide is this sort of notion that a title should intrigue somebody and not explain something. So that's hard. Like, so on its face, it's a hard thing to do. And I think it just sort of came to me because really what's happening is it's the essence of the book distilled down. What is really the book about? Well, in the first chapter, a mom has to decide in an emergency between saving her daughter or saving her daughter's bully. She can't do both.
And she has no time to prepare for that decision. The decision comes upon her immediately.
Right. And like a lot of things, I always think about, you know, police and how they have to make these split-second decisions, or firefighters, like, you know, those great firefighters who ran into the building in 9/11, you know, they ran in without hesitation. People act in emergencies, and sometimes it's the right decision, and sometimes it's the wrong one. And so she has to really decide, and I thought, well, really what's happening is she has to save somebody, and her kid would say, save me, the daughter's bully would say, save me, and ultimately when you learn more about this woman's past, you know, I think one of the reviews said, actually the New York Times, so I was finally happy about that, but they said the woman is, it's really about the woman saving herself. Which is exactly right.
Right, exactly. So it's got all these different meanings, and that's what makes your book so good too. Because there's all these hidden meanings to them, things that are in the book, and that you know, like you just said, and there's all these different things going on, and I mean Rose McKenna. How do you pick names for your books anyway?
That was a hard name, and it's always hard for a main. I like the name McKenna. I know people named McKenna. It seems like a real name to me.
Mm-hmm.
And Rose is a little different, and I sort of liked it together, but I got to tell you, I changed her name a bunch of times. I'm always doing these global search and replaces until I'm happy with the name, I don't really think I have the book or the character.
So you really think of the name first. That's interesting. I've never asked that before. But
haven't, and it's true. And I end up changing the name a lot, and when I change the name, I start to think about the character differently, too. And it always helps me. Everything, it's just weird how your brain works when you're writing. I mean, everything sort of matters so much. And I often find, like, if I can't figure out a name, it means I can't figure out a character.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sort of funny, because in the beginning of this book, there's a quote. I didn't really realize until this moment, but there's a quote from one of the J.K. Rowling books, and it's Dumbledore says something that, like, what is it, something like, before you, what, to name, don't be afraid to name something, or name me, there's something about naming things, but I think it's
always
true.
Use the proper name for everything. Fear of a name increases fear of the thing itself.
Right, and so it's sort of interesting, the relationship between a name and the emotional reaction to it. You know, I think that is somehow related to character. If I can't name the character, I don't understand who she is yet. But I try not to stress about that in the early draft. I go, all right, let's just figure out what happens and what she does. And then the story unfolds and the characterization unfolds and the thing she does define who she is, and then her name comes to announce itself.
Well, you go through a lot writing a book. It makes me think, you know, is it always fun to write a book, or are there days you just like...
Never fun to write a book.
Never fun for you? Don't you have moments where you're just flowing and the words are coming out and you're just having fun writing and creating? And you must have moments like that. Every writer must get it.
I have moments where, no, because I think, maybe because I don't write the first draft with an outline, so I'm not sure I have a story. And when you're really, I'm always, the big picture is always in mind. So, I mean, after 18 books, I'm always very aware that I need a book, not just a great paragraph.
Well, what is it about you, your books that, I mean, you've sold, and the figures, I think, 25 million copies in print, which is just staggering. It staggers me, and it's a lot of books. But whatever you're doing a great job of it, or you wouldn't be where you are right now.
Well, you're sweet to say that. I mean, I've been doing it a long time. I hope I try to get better. I mean, I care a lot about the writing and everything about it. I mean, although I love to joke around, I don't. I take the writing and the novels very seriously.
Well, see, that's the thing. When you joke around, you put yourself on other people's levels too, and so they understand your pain. So when you're joking, they're joking with you, and you're saying to them is you are a human being just like me, and I'm going to treat you that way, and that's what you do, and that's why people love you so much.
Well, that's really sweet of you.
Because you're not towering above everybody else because you've been a major success. You're a regular human being, and
I think everybody's a regular human being.
Right.
And that's what's cool about books, I think, because books make people be that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're really going to open your heart to somebody, and I think I do that in my novels, even if I'm not the main character, which I'm not, but certainly the emotional part is really a true part of me. And so if you read my books, you kind of know me. And so once you've been open, you can't really put on airs, and I don't think there's anything to put on airs about anyway. I mean, my family was very working class. To me, I don't.
And your life is an open book. I mean, people that read your column books and these books know a lot about you. I mean,
yeah, they do.
So,
right.
Was there any kind of a fear of opening yourself up so much?
No, because the funny thing is, like the column books, as you call them, you know, that's because I do the humor column, which is about, and that's what I call them too, is about just my life and my own daughter and my own mother and real things. And the funny thing is, I started writing that 3 years ago, which I guess was about 15 years into a career writing fiction. And the funny thing was, I don't think, in a way, I think I expose much more about myself in the fiction than I do in the nonfiction. Because the fiction is really so emotional and so much about these heartfelt issues, and a big, long, 100,000-word novel where you're really going to explore all kinds of things about a character. And the column books, even though I think they're really funny and
well,
true and relatable, are really just a little slice.
I'm still laughing about the cookie jar, the New York Times cookie jar. It just breaks me up laughing. I'm just thinking about these things. And this really happened.
It makes me sad. I mean, because it's sort of, I mean, the story is that I ordered it for my mother, and it didn't come. And I felt like so lame because I basically, you know, sending her a cookie jar and cookies that someone else baked. That was my Mother's Day gift last year. And sure enough, it doesn't come. And that drives her nuts. And so for Mother's Day, she spends every time we talk on the phone telling me, make sure you don't get charged, make sure you don't get charged. And she actually ended up being right. I did get charged.
Oh, really?
She charged me. Charged me $100. It was a $100 thing. And then she saw in the newspaper that it was a $95 cookie jar. And she's like, what kind of thing is a $95 cookie jar? I don't even like cookies. I didn't even, you know.
And on and on. You must get a headache from it. You know?
I know. And I see, well, of course, that's what my mother is for, to give me a headache.
That's right. but you laugh. I mean, and when we're all, you're going to laugh until the day you die about these things.
Because
we remember people for the good and the bad, the things that drive us crazy, or sometimes the best parts of other people.
Right. And the funny thing is, as you just say, like, sometimes she's right. As soon as she said to me, they're going to charge you, I'm like, ugh, no, they're not. You know, it's the New York Times. They have their record keeping. They're not going to charge me. Sure enough, I look on the bill. They charge me.
Yeah, your time, I mean, I can't even imagine how you ever have time to sit back and relax and take everything in that you've accomplished. Have you accomplished any part of what you, I mean, not any part, I don't mean to say it that way, but have you accomplished everything you've meant to, you want to accomplish?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I feel like I really want to keep on writing. I sort of feel like I want to leave a nice big body of work that is kind of uniformly, I'm hoping, uniformly excellent, so that my name sort of means something to people, so that when they feel like they know they're not going to get disappointed, or they're going to really enjoy whatever the story is that I'm telling. And, oh, my God, I feel like I have an awful lot left to go.
Right, and you do, and that's another beauty. I mean, you're one of the few authors that I read where I can read anything you write and enjoy it.
Aw, thank you for that.
And it's but I'm one of the weirdest readers. I mean, I can pick up an author that I love and start reading their new book, and I can't read it. And, you know, I don't know why that happens, but it never happens with your books.
Oh,
I wonder why that is.
Well, you think maybe because, the truth is sometimes, like...
What is the trick? I'd like to know what the trick for writing.
I don't know. I know that some... I mean, I hope I don't have an... I try not to have unevenness, but everybody's human, and, you know, maybe they're tired, maybe they had a bad year, maybe they lost a parent. You know, maybe something happened in their life that their fiction... Sometimes people do run dry. Sometimes they phone it in. You know, I try to guard against all that stuff, but, you know, I hope I never...
And the endings are where I have the biggest problem with books a lot of times, the way they end them. Sometimes they end too quickly. I mean, the ending, to me, has got to be perfect, and it's not easy to have a perfect ending.
No, it's really so critical, too.
Right.
And I feel like Save Me, I like the ending. It sort of, somebody wrote the other day, had an email, sort of had a double ending. I'm like, yeah, it kind of does. And I feel lucky about that. I can't take any credit for that. I don't know why, but I tend to luck out in endings. But I think, that's a really, like, that would be satisfying. Like, it's a little bit of a surprise. You don't see it coming, or that there's a kind of a top line of the plot that's going to get resolved, and then sort of something more going on beneath the surface. Like, that this character really needs to redeem herself, which is something you don't understand really at the beginning of the book, and I didn't understand, and she didn't understand. Until, as time goes on, she realizes there's something she's got to do. And so that has to get resolved, too.
You must get a lot of people that write to you and want to know what the secret of getting published is. And I mean, when you started out, I remember some of your signings, there were like 3 or 4 people there. Now there's 300 or 400, sometimes thousands of people that show up for these.
But
what a difference. I mean, what would you say to them?
Well, I'm really encouraging to them. I mean, I have, you know, on the website, it's scottalini.com. But there isn't a secret to it. I think the only thing is, first, just do it. I mean, I think it's a little behavioral. You have to keep, and you have to not get so kind of worn down by rejection. You have to go, you know what? Whatever it is you visualize, I always visualize oddly, I visualize, I'm embarrassed with this, but I visualize a duck. I actually say it's water rolling off a duck, which is a complete cliche, but I try to imagine a little duck.
So you actually visualize it, interesting.
I do a lot of visualizing. I do. I also visualize more, a little punching bag. Do you know those weird punching bags with the faces that are like clowns?
Yeah.
Right? And they get punched, and they bop right back up. I said, that's me. That's how I think of it.
Have you ever cried over a bad review?
You know what? Amazingly enough, I have not gotten a lot of bad reviews. I got one review a long time ago that was a little negative about one aspect, and I was like, oh, you.
A curse on your family, right?
Well, actually, part of it was that, you know, he clearly, like, hadn't read it. Right. And I was like, wow, dude, you got to at least do your homework.
Absolutely.
Because it was something completely erroneous.
As a bookseller, and I do get many a chance to sell books, I get so angry at people when they'll say, well, I don't read her. And then you say to them, why not? Well, I don't know. I just don't. They just have it in their mind that they're not going to like it before they even try to read it.
And I think the art of writing a review is exactly that. You have to really come open-minded to something. You can't go, ugh, I hate literary fiction, and then skewer literary fiction. You know, but in answer to your question, for example, there's lots of reviews these days online, right?
Oh,
you can go to any website and read people say crappy stuff about you. And
but you've had a lot of good reviews for Save Me. I mean, I know I've read some of them.
Oh, this is the best reviewed book I've ever done. I mean, this is just, I've gotten Washington Post and New York Times both loved it. That's really amazing for me to even get reviewed in both of those organs at the same time.
But can you see yourself in Rose's position? And what would you do? What do you think you would do in her position?
No one's asked me that. You know what? Honestly, I would have done just what she did. She split the difference. She tried to get the one kid out and run back for her own kid. She does it unthinking. So that later, you know, her husband's looking at her like, wait a minute, you got another kid out before our kid? But you can't ignore the child standing in front of you.
Right.
But you also can't ignore your own child. And I think what she did was really responsible. But what's so great about it, and sort of horrifying, but I guess, you know, happily it's fiction, it didn't really happen, is that, although it could have, because I worked really hard on getting the details of this firefight.
You work very hard all the time. I don't know how you must sleep very well at night.
Well, yeah, I do, actually.
But anyway, I interrupted your train of thought there.
No, but I think I worked really hard on the fire. I mean, I wanted it to be credible, and it could happen. But I think she does a thing that I think a lot of people would do. You know, the thing about sometimes, I think good-hearted people, they try to do too much. You know, she tried to do too much and in a way did nothing well. You know, her kid almost died and the other kid almost died. And the other thing about it, too, in this, what I like about the situation, which just presented itself, I mean, I didn't really make up the situation. I just sort of said, wow, that could happen. What would happen next? Is that she overestimated her ability to control the situation, right? Because when you take a kid and you run the kid outside, you don't think that kid's going to run back. Who's going to run back into a burning building? Well, nobody except the little kid. And I don't want to give everything away because there's lots of twists and turns. But, you know, that's the whole thing about life. You think you can control things. And then, the wild card happens. And you're like, what?
Right.
And that's what I like about what feels real to me about what happened to her. So that's what I would do what she did, and I'd probably be caught in the same damn bind she gets caught in.
I'm surprised nobody's asked you that question.
No one has. You always ask the best questions, David.
Oh, thank you.
It's true.
Oh, I think I'm going to cry now. chapters 45 and 46, I wanted to... those are my favorite chapters in this book now. You're going to have to read the book in order to know what happens in chapter 46.
You're going to have to remind me. I don't remember.
Because I had a feeling you might forget. But
sounds like towards the end.
It's when Rose is starting to tell what happened in her past. There's something that happened in the past. We can't talk about it because it'll ruin part of the book, I think, if I go into too much detail. But she admits to Leo what happened before.
I know it well.
So those I read those chapters and I thought, wow, this is just Lisa at her best right here. And I love these two chapters. And I always think of your books as a whole, as I enjoy the whole thing. But for some reason, those two chapters just rang with me and just stay with me. And I think about them a lot. Because it was
very kind of you.
Heartwarming.
Well, I tried to imagine what it would be like to be in that situation.
It's hard to call it heartwarming because it's kind of, she admits something horrible that happened, but heartwarming in that she's letting it all out. She's letting all the pain come out.
Heartfelt.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's definitely heartfelt. Because the weird thing is, it's not, you're not, like, if you're writing it, you're almost acting it in your head. So I'm actually trying to imagine that. And I would, it's tough. You know, that's what I also liked about writing a somewhat older protagonist. I mean, she's not a 25-year-old. She's been married. She is divorced. She's trying, she has a little baggage. She's lived a little.
Sounds like somebody else I know.
It sounds like everybody I know. It sounds like anybody worth knowing.
But those two chapters are just wonderful, and as well as the whole book. But I mean, and did you tour a potato chip factory for this book?
Yes, I did.
Tell me about it. What's the tour of a potato chip factory like?
I mean, first of all, they give you free hot potato chips, which is like the best thing I've ever eaten.
You say, I'm never leaving this place.
That's exactly right. Like, it smells in your clothes for weeks and you don't mind.
And now there are people out there thinking, boy, she gets all this free stuff because she's a famous author. I mean, she gets to tour all these places and they give her free potato chips. What a life. I'm going to become an author.
No, they do it to everybody, though. That wasn't just for me. But the funny thing is, I went there and I ate the whole entire tray myself. Kind of embarrassing.
Did you really? Or were you just saying that?
No, honest to God, I eat the whole thing. They bring a cafeteria tray into the room where the baking machine is, and they fill up like a whole cafeteria tray on a paper towel with all these super like warm potato chips. And you know, so I'm doing research and the woman's talking, and I can throw it down big time. I love potato chips. And also, you know, sometimes I eat, well, it's like the bad example of mindless eating, but she's talking to me and I'm eating, and so I look down, I'm like, I ate the whole tray.
It's not embarrassing. You like to eat food. Who doesn't? I mean, you're in the same boat every other American's in. I don't know anybody doesn't like to eat.
He was kind enough not to remark what a little piglet I was.
But it's so interesting that you do a lot of research. And I remember you did one before. Now I can't remember. It was somewhere out in western Pennsylvania.
Centralia.
See, how do you decide where you're going to go? How do you decide how it's going to play into the novel? I mean, how do you?
I don't really know. I just sort of, you know, and again, it's like we can't give too much away, but I just
right,
like,
exactly.
It's kind of interesting. It's sort of, if it interests me, I make a bet and pray that it will interest someone else. And there's a lot I don't know about the world, so when I find out something, I'm like, well, that's interesting. And so I kind of...
So you're learning, even as you're doing this research.
Really,
you're learning yourself.
Well said. Exactly right.
Which is wonderful. Who doesn't want to learn things?
Who doesn't? And the truth is, I don't know that much, and so it's good, because the more... I feel like sometimes I get to explore things because I decided to write a book about it.
Well, what
and I go, I'll figure that out when I write about that.
What have you learned about yourself in writing 18 books?
Oh, my God, David, you're in the zone.
Yeah.
Pulling me here.
What have you learned about yourself? I mean, obviously, you know that you're a hard worker because you work hard on these things, and everybody should know that because I know how hard you work, and I know you close yourself up in your house and work on this until it turns out right. But what have you learned about yourself?
I think I've learned, that insecurity doesn't go away.
So you're always going to be insecure?
I'm always going to feel like, oh no, this book is not going to have, you know, because I don't have an outline, so I don't know how it ends, and I don't know how it middles, and I don't know, you know,
like,
oh
middles.
No, I'm going to be in trouble. I have a lot of that. And I think the truth is, the other thing I've learned is that that isn't the worst thing. That it kind of powers, it's okay to be anxious. It's okay to, you know, it helps you do a really great job. It makes you do more than you really need to. And then if you dial it back, or at least like I find that my editing is usually easy because I've worked so hard and sweated so much over the first draft that I don't have a lot to edit. Who knows? You know, I think it's probably as you get older, just a matter of accepting the things that you can't change. Isn't that the Serenity Prayer or something?
Yes.
I can't change my insecurity. So I've decided it's my new best friend.
But, you know, I've seen you at many of book signing, as we know, as you and I both know, but everybody out there will know now. But your insecurities, everybody laughs, and you have a good time, and you laugh, and they laugh, and they're not so bad after you let them out, are they?
I think the truth is it's really kind of nice because I've noticed more, maybe because I'm, you know, writing about such emotional issues, or maybe because I'm doing the nonfiction or the memoir books. But the more open I am, the more open everybody else is.
Right.
Nobody laughs.
And people identify with you to the degree. They know when you start talking about things that are bothering you, things that you've been through, things that you're embarrassed about, they understand because they have the same embarrassments.
Well, I hope that's true. I mean, it does feel that way a little bit. And I think the thing that everybody gets worried about is, oh my God, what if I say something and I tell this thing? And then you go, well, you go to that place where you tell the thing. And then the world doesn't fall apart. It's just like failure. I mean, I was rejected, had 5 years of rejection. And, you know, I think people who don't get used to rejection are in a bad, they're in worse shape than people who do. It's a good thing to fail. It's okay. And when the world doesn't dissolve, that's why a lot of people want to write, and I really want to encourage them. But sometimes I'll get emails from somebody who goes, well, my first book was rejected, and so I stopped. I'm like, well, that's unfortunate, because that's no way to be in this life, to do anything.
Right.
You know, you can't just fold up the tent because you lose, and you're going to lose a lot.
You had Philip Roth as a teacher in college, was it?
I did, for a year long.
And I just found that out the other night. I'm like, I didn't know that before. There's all these little things are there any other little things that people out there don't know about you that you could reveal right now?
probably that I eat the same thing every night for dinner for about the past 3 months.
No, you have. That's not
honestly
true.
I have. I totally have. I do. I got these Morningstar Farms. It's like veggie chicken, and I'm so in love with it, I can't wait to eat it.
Every night? Well, see, you look forward to it every night. There's nothing wrong with it.
I do. I'm very excited about my veggie chicken.
And I'm sure it's good for you, too.
It is good for me. I lost a little weight on it, so now I'm addicted to it.
Are you a happy person in general? I mean, that's one of the things I love about you the most, the fact that when I see you and talk to you, my day feels better.
Aww.
It does. No, I'm not
just... that's really nice.
I know it sounds like I'm just saying that, but it's the absolute truth. I can remember...
No, we go back, so I appreciate that. And you don't say things you don't mean.
And when I saw you in the parking lot of one of the signs, I think it was at Barnes & Noble, I just remember thinking, wow, what a... beautiful day just to see Lisa and have that hug from her. And you never know how much a hug's going to mean to somebody until
that's why I hug people, because I like it. I mean, I do it for me.
Right.
I like it because a little bit, like I've noticed over time, there are people who didn't hug me at signings, and now they're like crazy. Now they're like, where's my hug?
But you treat everybody that way. I mean, when you do a signing, you talk to every person. You make sure every person gets their book signed. I don't know how you do it. I look and I get tired.
Oh, no, it's so fun. You know what's funny, though? Like at a signing, like I'll hug everybody. I'm just hug people. And every single tour, somebody says, you are going to get a cold. And you know what? I never do. I haven't had a cold since I've been writing.
That is amazing.
That it's because I hug all these people and I'm like a super resistant to all, you know what I mean?
Hey, that might be it. Maybe I should start hugging more people.
I'm telling you, David, start.
Do you ever get moved by any of your books when you're writing them? Do you ever, like, start crying in the middle of writing a book?
Yeah, but it's not by my book that I'm writing. It's really the person's situation. Because if you really make a really incredible situation, like this woman singing her past, I could see how I could have made the mistake that she made. And it would follow me my whole life, too. And so I thought, what could that be? You know, sometimes just to write, you just need a lot of empathy. And I think a lot of people have it. You just have to tap into it, really. So if you're going to think, God, what is it like to... Or like when she's standing there and she sees her kid, and what's her kid look like after she's been like... has smoke inhalation and her poor little face and her hair and there's dust in it. And you just imagine that and you go, I could imagine that.
And that's another thing that really makes you think about this book. We have Rose here who goes through this, and you think, is anybody going to treat her normally ever again? Or is she going to be a pariah for the rest of her life?
Right. It's hard.
I mean, do you think about that? Just think about that for a second, how one little incident can change your whole life.
And I think it's true, and I think it's especially true now. It sort of happens to her with the trial by Facebook that, you know, gossip is a really scary and dangerous thing.
It certainly is.
Right? And the problem with the internet is that it, you know, gossip, it inflames it, it transmits it. In nanoseconds, everybody can know it. It could be completely wrong information. You know, even today, before we spoke, I went on my Facebook. I don't have anything to post today. Mm-hmm. I try to post something fun or something cute about the dogs, but I didn't really have anything today, so I don't say anything. But I checked out my page, and sure enough, somebody's posted something there. And it was about, I think it's a virus, actually. Something about, click here to see gruesome photos of bin Laden. I'm like, you know what? Don't put that on my page. I don't want that there. I don't want anyone to see it. I don't want anyone to get a virus because of it. Now, that's just weird. So you can put on anybody's page anything, and you can spread nasty stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the bell can't be unrung. And that's kind of what happens to her, and I can see how easily that can happen.
And you ever see something that you wrote to somebody on the internet somewhere else? Like you'll be in another site and you'll see it somehow, what you've written, you're like, why did I write that?
No, but I've seen, I have my cell phone, a Google alert in case there's a review or something.
Right.
And a lot of times I'll forget something I said in an interview and then I'll read and go, that doesn't, I should have said that better. Or
you always second guess yourself. I mean, that's got to be second nature to everybody. You're second guessing yourself.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
who's
the
got
thing
the...
is nothing ever goes away now. Like, there's lots of times when I'll do a signing and somebody videotapes it. I'm like, really? And they'll put the videotape up on their page. Now, so all the comments, I thought they were kind of, and you know I like to goof around at signings, right. Are kind of off the cuff, completely natural. You know, nothing terrible, but certainly not your, you know, the kind of thing you would say that's more unguarded. Happily, I don't really care, but it is strange. Right. It is strange because nothing disappears now.
There's a very comfortable feeling with you because I know that I can get in touch with you by email. I mean, I can't email John Grisham tonight and say hello to him because he won't even read it, let alone get it. Whereas you are very accessible to all your fans. I mean,
of course I am. And you're so cute because your ray line always says David English here, like I don't know who it is.
You told me to do that. But I mean, I find that a little offensive that authors have to be that way, that they can't be approached by the regular normal person. You know, I mean, I don't even know if I could get close to John Grisham to say hello to him.
Well, I think that it's unfortunate. I think if that's true about authors, it's their loss.
Yeah.
Because you really are writing something that is going to be, if you're lucky, read by the general public, and you can't be out of touch with that. You know, even if you're a big fancy person, and I'm not, but no matter who you are, you still have to live in the world. And I think when authors don't, and I can think of one or two that got really famous and really rich and moved somewhere, it shows in their writing. Their writing starts to be only about themselves. Mm-hmm. And guess what? No one's interested. At least I'm not. I'm like, wow, write about normal people. Don't write about, you know, the life of a best-selling writer.
Right.
Really.
But, I mean, you expose yourself to a lot of different people. I mean, you meet so many different people, and it's nice. But I guess there's a fear, too, and you might meet somebody crazy.
I'm actually not afraid. I mean, knock wood, I'm not. I really love people.
What was the hardest thing about Save Me to write? Was there a particular passage in the book that was hard to write, or...
I think actually the chapters that you pointed out.
They were the hardest to write?
Confesses that thing that happened. And I thought about that. And I actually went to a street, which is, you could imagine the street, but I imagined the thing happening on the street. So I actually went to an actual street to really have it. And I just thought, and actually she goes back to that street in the book. So I was like, this can really happen. And that was hard to imagine, and it was emotionally difficult to imagine. So it's really, you know, gratifying that that's what you picked out, because I really went there. And I think anybody writing, you know, you just go there in your imagination. That's the cool thing about books. You can imagine it. The reader imagines it. And that's the whole point.
Right. When you're done a book, now, when I say done, you've got it all done, you're ready to send it off to wherever you send it.
Right.
How do you know that it's perfect? How do you know that there isn't something, or are you still going through it in your mind? Well, maybe I should change that.
I never think it's perfect. I'm still going through it in my mind.
Well, how do you just send it without...
They
just
make me.
Send it or else, Lisa.
So I'm like, see, I'm a good girl, and I follow the rules, and so and I have a personal pride in that I never miss a deadline. So I will...
And you never have.
And I never have. So I will stay up late and pull all-nighters for a long time to make the deadline. And then I go, you know what? I'm like so worked up and exhausted. I go, well, this is easy. You have to turn it in then. Now, what's cool about it is then the editor looks at it, the agent looks at it. You can buy a month there because they both look at it. And they get back to me pretty quick, but I'll get another month. I can often redo the whole damn thing, and usually I do.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it, you know, go through it one more time with a really fine-tooth comb, take their comments in, and also let it cool. Let it cool for like 4 days, so don't look at it. Forget that you wrote it. And for some odd reason, I can pick it up like somebody else wrote it and go, oh, that doesn't work. That, you need to fix that. That does work. You know, and that's the really kind of interesting thing about writing.
And once again, you have to be introspective and really be honest with yourself. This is not good, or this is not, and have other people say the same thing. Not be afraid to say, well, Lisa, I don't think that works. You got to change that. You got to change this.
And that's really important because.
But how do you? The question is, how do you know who really knows what they're doing and who doesn't?
Well, I don't. First off, no one else is interested in reading it except for my agent and my editor. And I'm fine with that because I think they both have. They both want the same. We all three. I was a lawyer before,
right.
And it was kind of It's kind of different because the other side is adversarial, and so a lot of times you're dealing a lot with people who are against you, and invested in being against you. And I was a litigator, a trial lawyer. There's fighting. So now my life is so nice and calm because my agent and my editor both we're all on the same side. The side is, let's make the best book we can, and they're professional enough. Like you were saying about reviewers, you can't go, I don't like what this is, therefore I don't like this thing.
Right.
They're not writing the book from the ground up. That's my job. They're saying, if this is what you're trying to do, here's how to make it work better.
Right.
And I've worked, this is a new editor to me, but I've worked with her for 3 years now, and I really like her and really respect her judgment. And my agent I've worked with for almost 20 years, so,
wow.
These people have proven themselves to me, and I'm hoping to prove myself to them. I think it works.
Do you think you have something to prove still, even after all these years?
Absolutely.
But you've done, you've accomplished a heck of a lot.
I want to accomplish more, and I think the other thing that happens is you don't want to, you're always proving that frankly, still got it.
I mean, Save Me is a great book, and I have faith that the next one's going to be a great book, too. I never think when I'm opening your book up to read it that it's not going to be a great book.
You're a sweetheart. I mean, I feel like these past three books have been sort of another whole level.
Look Again is brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Well, thank you. I think this whole mother-child thing I'm writing about is so resonant with me, and I think readers are liking it and finding me. And that makes me happy.
Right. Now, Jodi Picoult's comment. Now, what was her first comment when she read the book?
Well, it was just what she said. I mean, it's really wonderful. I was so grateful to her. I don't usually ask, they're called blurbs, where you write somebody and go, would you read my book? And if you like it, would you comment? And believe me, nobody gives it. I get asked for them all the time. I give them out when I hang up, I have to do one tonight. So I have to read a book and say what I think. If I don't like the book, I don't comment.
Oh.
Well, you
can't. You're right. I mean, there has to be you have to be honest. If you're not going to be honest, what's the sense of doing it at all?
Right. And the truth is, my compact is with my readers. So if my quote is on somebody's book, I get a lot of emails that says, I bought this book because you said it was great. And and damn it, it better be great if I say that.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to let them down on my book or my recommendations. So what happened with this book is I wrote to Jodi because I think she's terrific. And I said, listen, we've met once or twice, but, I mean, it's an illusion to think I'm all big buddies with these people. I'm not. And I was like, would you mind reading the book and let me know what you think? And she wrote, this incredible blurb, which was, impossible to put down. And she totally got the ethical point of the book and the dilemma the woman has. And we put that quote right on the cover. And it was really very kind of her because I think it's just a generous thing to do. And she's great. And I've always been a fan, and now I'm a double million times fan.
Well, what would you say if anybody ever came up to you at a signing and said, well, you know what, I just don't like any of your books. I mean, how would you react to that? I'm wondering how you would react to something like that.
I've had people say, I don't like, there's the Rosato books. I've had people say, I only like the Rosato books. I've had people say, I only like Benny and I don't like Mary. You know how people are.
Yeah,
they jump right up. And the truth is, I invite it. I want to hear. I want to hear.
Does that influence what you write?
No.
No. You're still going
to... But I want to hear it. I think if everybody said...
Well, everybody misses Mary, too. I mean, anytime you go to one of your events, everybody's like, when's Mary coming back?
I know. And I was like, well, she was just back. But I think if everybody said the same thing, I would think about it hard.
Right.
But no one ever says the same thing.
Everybody says something.
Which is awesome, because then you can go, that old, you know, can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself.
There's a scene in one of your books, and I don't ask me which one it was, because I can't remember, but there's a scene where, I think it's Judy, she's in this house with her, it must be Mary and the other girl, and I can't remember all their names now, Benny and Mary, are talking about her, and they don't know that she can hear them.
Oh, right. I remember that scene.
That is one of my favorite scenes in all your books, because it made me laugh, and I think, oh, my gosh, what would I do if I heard people talking about me and they were saying
that? You are a sweetie, because that scene was so fun to write, because I was like, this is really cool, because, you wonder, like, what would I do?
And she's ready to kill them, you know?
And for me, it was cool, because she was...
Have you ever had that happen to you, where somebody was talking about you, and you heard it, and they didn't know you were listening?
Yes, but they didn't. Happily, they didn't say anything bad, and I was so happy. I'll tell you the story. I was on a conference call, and the people thought that I hung up, but I actually hadn't. I mean, I was about to, but I heard the one say to the other, "Oh, do you get along with her? Do you get along with her?" And I'm like, "Oh my God! Oh God!"
Well, Lisa, you give so much love out. How could anybody not feel love?
I know, please. I'm such a cupcake. But the guy said, "Oh yeah, she's great." And I was like, and it was the most awesome thing, because I'm like, "Dude, you're awesome. You're great." You know, because you know, my heart was really in my throat. And then I was just like, let them hang up, and then I hung up. I've never said to them. That happened this year. I've never said to them, like, I heard that.
Right. But you did, and it, the fact that they didn't know you were listening makes it even more honest.
But it worked out well. But I like that. I like the passage you talked about, because it was sort of funny that Benny, you know, I don't know, she's such an important character, to have people diss her. I just like to hear what other people are saying about other people, so it's kind of funny.
Well, I still think that, and I know you're gonna say something when I say this, but that the gay character from the first book, I think you can bring somebody back like him with that humor. I really wish you would.
I miss that character so much. I was such a mistake. I have somewhere in some study group questions, what is the rookie mistake? And everywhere that Mary went, and that is the rookie mistake. To have that character die, he didn't need to die. He was so funny and so clever, and the kind of character that brightens everything. And,
right.
And my brother's gay, and I want more gay characters in my books. And I was like, why did I do that? It was just, I thought I was proving that this was a really scary villain, and so you had to really have him do something effective. You know, it's a big problem if your villain isn't effective.
Right.
Then he's not as scary.
No, absolutely.
You know, when you watch movies, you go, how many shots are they going to shoot and they not hit anybody?
Right.
They got to hit somebody. But on the other hand, I could have had him got hit and recover. And
right.
I'll bring him, you're right, I'll give him a different name and bring him back.
When Patricia Cuomo killed off Benton Wesley in her books, it just ruined her books for a while, and then she brought him back. But he was never the same. It was never the same character again. You have to be so careful that what you're doing is, I can't imagine what it's like for a writer.
You really do. Well, look at the people who end series and kill the character. I'm like, just don't do that.
Right, exactly.
I mean, people get, you know, you like to imagine this is real. I think it's real. You know, it's hard enough when an author dies. I mean, poor Robert Parker. I mean, Spencer's a wonderful character. I feel sad there's not going to be any more Spencers.
What do you hope is what people get from Save Me? Well, what do you want them to feel? What do you want them to get from the book?
I think, well, always you want it to be sort of moving and...
If somebody calls you up and they say, "Oh, I cried. I love this book," and that makes you feel good.
That makes me feel good.
Well, what is it?
Other people's misery makes me feel good.
As long as they don't say, "Well, I didn't like any of the characters in this book." I love
always
when people
love
say that.
They say they were up all night or they kept reading it. You know, I spoke at this school today, and the teacher made me so happy because she said, "You know, normally I can't get them to read, but they were like, could we just read this period?" And I was like, "Aw, you know that someone's engrossed." That's really the test. Like, people vote with their feet, and that's how it is. And that's how I am with certain books. If I carry the book around, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to get back to that.
Absolutely.
Right? Then that's a good book. That's the test. I don't care what genre, I don't know what you call it, I don't care anything. If you want to keep getting back to it, then it worked.
And I got news for you. If your books were bad, I would have stopped after the first one. The writing, you either love the writing or you don't. I love the writing. I love the stories. And, you can't duplicate that. And you certainly can't read a 300-page book if you're not enjoying the writing.
Well, that's sweet of you to say, because I know you read everything. So I like when I get a good grade from
it. And I must tell you, I have a friend who was reading Save Me last time I saw her, and she said she couldn't, she felt that way, too. She couldn't stop reading it, and she was reading it everywhere she could possibly read it.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, give her a hug for me. See, go hug her. You'll never get a cold again.
Well, next time I see her, maybe. But, that's the way people feel about books. That's the way they feel about your books. And then, now, there's going to be I heard you say there's going to be a movie of Look Again, or it looks good for a movie.
Well, they did. It was optioned by a movie producer. So that would be nice. My fingers are crossed, but, I'm in the book business, so my job is to write books.
Well, that's a good way to look at it.
That happened about, I guess at this point, a month ago. I haven't really called anybody. Somebody will call me if they need anything from me, and I'm trying to write the next book.
Right. Now, the next book, have you picked the title for the next book yet?
No, I haven't. I need a better title than the one I have. We can't reveal my stinky one. I have to think of a new one.
I can really open up the wound, can't I?
No. I know. You're terrible.
It's like picking that scab off. You don't have a title now. It's like, now you're going to worry all night. I don't have a title.
I've been worrying, actually. I have been worrying. And, that's why I tried it out on tour,
Will you know when you have it, do you think?
Yes.
You will know that?
I knew when I had Save Me, I said, oh, yeah, that will work. And I will know when I have it. And that's what the thing is. I know I don't have it. It's just like the character name. I don't have it yet.
Well, you know the whole story of the book. You know.
Well, I've only halfway written it, so I don't know the whole story. But I know half of it.
Well, don't you have to know when you're halfway through? Don't you have to pretty much know what's coming?
No, I don't know what's coming. I told you, I don't know. I don't know how it ends, and I don't know how it middles. I have no idea what's going to happen.
I've never heard of that term, middles, before. That's so funny.
I know, I made it up, and I think it works.
I love it. But you can be so honest about that. Most authors wouldn't even say that. They would just say, well, it's done when it's done. And I've heard one author in particular say that. Somebody asked her, how long does it take? Well, when it's done. That was their answer a very cold answer, I must say. But
I'm not that cold.
And if I said the name, you'd be surprised probably. But that's the point is, be nice to your readers. Without readers, who do you have?
Right. My God, we're the luckiest people in the world to be able to, have a story and be able to someone tell it. My God, I was off the point, but I was watching the news tonight, and there was a little girl, in the news, and it was always that feel-good part of the news, which I actually always feel good about, and the little girl got picked to tell her story, and she said, I'm so happy that everyone will hear my story, and I was like, I get you, 8-year-old, that is exactly
out of the mouth of babes. Children can say the most...
Little girl, I am so on your page.
You wish adults could be that honest sometimes.
I know.
Instead of holding back, is that what we learn over the course of our lives, how to hold back?
I think it is. Remember when Sally Field said, you like me, you really like me? That was just an honest thing to say. She was just happy to be appreciated.
Everybody looks at her like, oh, she's a little weird.
That's so uncool. You're not supposed to care.
Or Tom Cruise jumping up and down on the sofa. Everybody made such a big deal about
that. And I thought that was very nice. I was like, the guy's in love, and he didn't think he'd be in love again. That's a nice thing.
Right.
People are crazy sometimes.
And people look at it the weird way. What are you most appreciative of after all these years? What are the things that you're most appreciative of?
I think that I have that the readers are so wonderful, and also that there are people who I meet along the way who will put my book into people's hands. Various booksellers at times. I have a lot room to grow, and people have said, because I know I get the email. Or librarians will say, I'll get an email from somebody who said, gee, I didn't know what to read, and the librarian said this, or the bookseller said this, and I tried you, and I really liked it. I'm like, wow, somebody helped me out.
And, of course, it's dedicated to Joe Drabiak, who I worked with and who we'll miss forever.
He was
the ultimate bookseller.
He really was, and president of NABA, which is the Independent Booksellers Association in our region, and...
Yeah, and you're going to get misty if we go on.
I know, but then the book is dedicated to him, and he read every single one of my books and manuscript.
But you're also president now of Mystery Writers of America?
Yes, I am.
How did that come about?
I don't know.
You had the time for that, too.
They said you want to do it? I said, sure. Because I always want to help people.
Did you know what was involved before you said yes?
I did, because I was on the board once. And I sort of have a little, as you know, a little... my mission sometimes is to help people get into print, and that's one of the things Mystery Writers does really well.
Now, do you have to read all the Edgar nominations? I mean,
I have been on an Edgar committee, but I was not on the one this year. I actually was the MC of the Edgar Awards, which was totally funny.
Was it fun?
It was fun. It was fun. I was nervous, but
were you nervous? One of those open people you'll ever meet,
it's
nervous?
A big gig. What can I tell you? It is a big gig.
But you're good with big gigs, though. What have you not
done?
You know,
my publisher in the room. You have to sound smart. It's really, plus you have to be, you know, like try to be skinny, try to be pretty. It's too much.
You can't just be yourself, huh?
No, you have to be skinny and pretty, not like yourself at all.
Did you ever finish a book and have? I mean, are there any of your 18 books out there that there are parts that you wish you hadn't written? Are there any?
No. The only thing is the one I just said about Everywhere. I wish that character hadn't.
Yeah, that's the only regret you have in 18
that's
years.
That's my only regret.
And I didn't realize how universal that regret was. I thought it was just me.
No, it's me. I regret it a lot. I really regret it. I think it was a mistake. It was a straight-up mistake.
Now, do you prefer writing what you would call standalone books like Save Me, or do you prefer going back to the series? Well, what do you, if you had your druthers, what would you do?
No, I like both.
You like both, but you don't prefer one over the other.
No, I think both have their merits. It's fun to examine character over time like you do in a series, and you don't have to invent so much. The character comes with a lot of stuff. On the other hand, you're not as free.
Now, can you tell us at all where you're going to do research for the next book at all? Or are you not? Is it too early to say? Or will you?
This is hardcore. It's really interesting, and I think the answer is the Department of Justice. Din, 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 din.
Wow.
I know. I might have to go sit with the FBI, but I can't say more than that. I'm already giving away too much.
Just by saying the FBI, you've given away too much?
Yes. I mean, how often do I have to go see the FBI?
But you like giving away stuff. I mean,
I'd rather say in the Potato Factory than the FBI.
I'm trying to picture you in the Potato Factory eating all these potatoes.
I actually have a picture. I should send it to you.
I'm sort of picturing the scene in I Love Lucy where she's trying to eat all the grapes. Or the chocolates. The chocolates.
Right. I have all this grease around my mouth. It's so attractive.
I mean, you can see her face. I mean, the face with everything in her.
I know. God, what a great episode that was.
So do you get time to relax and watch TV? Or do you get time to read other books? I mean, I know you read other books, but how do you do it and still keep on track?
At the end of the day, like if I didn't have to read this book for a blurb, I would be reading my own book. I would be reading something I want to read.
Can you tell us what the title is?
What, dear?
Can you tell us what the title is of that book you're going to be reading for the
book?
Oh, you can't.
No, because I'm not sure if I like it enough to give it a blurb yet.
Okay.
And you go, oh, she didn't like it.
Oh, if we mention it, then really.
You inquiring reporter, you.
I know. Maybe you could email me and let me know.
I will.
I won't tell anybody. I won't tell anybody. I promise. But you must have had some of the 18 books that were, there must be one of the 18 that was totally fun to write. You say there's a lot of work, and there's got to be one.
I think all the edits are more fun. All the edits are fun. Once the first draft, like right now I'm in first draft of the next book, and that's just not fun. It's never fun.
How many drafts are there usually?
Pardon me?
How many drafts are there usually?
Well, if you just say there's a first draft and a final draft, you just say there's two, although there's like 300.
Right.
But once I get the whole story done, then I feel a lot better about myself, what I'm doing, my job, my prospects, my life in general.
Do you think people have any idea how much work is involved with writing a book until they do it?
I don't know. Sometimes I think they make too much of it. You know, I don't like people to, like, think it's so impossible that they can't do it.
Right.
It's like any, people work so hard in this country. Look, you work really hard. Your listeners don't know it's 9 o'clock, you know, at night.
Right.
I mean, this is really fun, but there's a lot of people work at 9 o'clock at night. I'm always a little amazed when I take them on tour. You know, if I have to get up early, sometimes I have to make a 6 o'clock plane, and you go to the airport, and it's full. All the people, all the newsstands, all the TSA people, all the security people, all the passengers, all the pilots. This country, people around the world, they work hard.
And it's interesting, when you go places, you don't say to people, well, I'm Lisa Scottolini, I'm a big author. You just act like a normal person. And it's fascinating to me that you do that. I mean, because if you were John Grisham and you said that, people would be like, oh, wow. But, you know, you're just a normal person, and you act
I am a normal person. Maybe if I get as big as John Grisham, I'll get really, I won't.
But you're getting really close.
But I met him once, and he was a pretty nice guy.
Yeah.
So, in addition to being, like, super hot. But he loves his wife, so.
How did we get to talk about John Grisham? We've already mentioned him three times.
With the National Book Festival, I'm like, oh, my God, that's John Grisham. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God.
That's right. Is that the, yeah. Yeah, I was there that day, actually, but I didn't feel like spending 3 hours in line to see him. I would only do that for Stephen King, I think. But
well, he was floating around later, so I grabbed him.
But we have to say goodbye at some point, I think.
Yes, I guess we do.
But the book, again, is called Save Me. It's out from St. Martin's Press and all your bookstores. It's actually number 7 on the New York Times right now?
It's actually on the... I think it's going into its 4th week. I just found out tonight. It's hanging in there. Yay!
Now, have you ever been number 1 on the New York Times?
No.
What's the closest?
That's bad. I've been 2.
You've been 2?
I have been 2.
Which one was 2?
Look Again was number 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Now you just need to write a book like Look Again, only better, and then you'll be
number 1. Someday I'll get to be number 1.
I don't know how it could be better than Look Again. Look Again's a pretty good book. It's a pretty excellent
book. Well, we'll see the next one. I'm really loving the next one, so we'll hope that turns out well.
Right. Well, we've been talking to Lisa Scottolini the whole time. This has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right.